Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, tonight, let's talk ghosts. Well, specifically, a ghost story. My next guest is a filmmaker. David Lowery is well known for his independent films, including the modern Western Ain't Them Body Saints, which starred Casey Affleck and Rooney Mara back in 2013. And on the heels of that Sundance success made the Disney live-action film Pete's Dragon. His new film, which he wrote and directed, is called A Ghost Story, and it's out in theaters tonight. It's a film that reunites Affleck and Mara. The film explores the afterlife. But it's much more than that. It's a stirring tale of existence, romance, identity, and ultimately letting go. And even though the ghost has a familiar look, a white sheet with eye holes, it's a new take on the old haunted house genre. The old saying goes, home is where the heart is, but in this film, it may be home is where the soul goes. A Ghost Story was a hit at Sundance, and the film is being distributed by A24 Films, and filmmaker David Lowery is my guest tonight at the big table. David, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
So, did you set out to tell a ghost story?
Yes, because the image of a ghost in a bedsheet in an empty house was sort of where I began with this project. So it was always going to be a ghost story, but I didn't know quite what form it was going to take.
What about it? What about that concept, the idea of a bedsheet and taking the old classic ghost as we all know it here in pop culture history and playing off of that?
Well, to begin with, it made me laugh. And laughter is a wonderful gateway to all sorts of other emotions. And something about that image, which is so childlike and so naive, in an empty house just felt sad as well as humorous to me.
Right.
And I wanted to sort of see like how far we could take it. How much leeway could we get with a guy in a bedsheet in terms of taking audiences on an emotional journey?
Do you have a love or a fascination with ghost stories with the haunted house genres? Or was it truly just this idea of this image of a guy in a bedsheet makes me laugh?
I've always loved haunted house movies. I've loved horror movies of all shapes and sizes. I mean, that's one of my favorite genres, favorite things to do at the movies is to go get scared. And I've always wanted to make a horror film. And while this movie isn't scary, nor is it a horror film per se, it does employ the language of the genre to different ends.
I guess you can't put it in the horror genre because it doesn't have that, you know, that fright.
Yeah.
But I mean, it is a story about ghosts and it is a story about death and afterlife. And there's a lot in there that does play along the idea of what we're not necessarily comfortable with, this idea of what happens to us when we die.
Correct. And I suppose the closest thing it comes to being a horror film is that some people have said that it's existentially terrifying. And I would subscribe to that.
Yeah,
It ultimately, I think, does have a happy ending, but for a while there, things get pretty bleak.
After you realize that, okay, I'm laughing at this bedsheet.
Yeah.
You know, was that the intent? The intent, once you started to delve into the idea of what happens to us after we die, was the intent to go after a story of the afterlife, to almost be the guy who explains how it works?
No, I mean, while the movie is meant to be taken at face value and the story is meant to be very literal, I am not, you know, hypothesizing that this is what happens to us after we die. I think that ghost stories, horror movies in general, but ghost stories in particular, are very good at giving voice to fears that we have as human beings. And they reflect fears and concerns and ideas that we deal with in our everyday lives in a very potent fashion. So on that level, the film is a metaphor, and I definitely do not believe that we all wind up as bedsheet ghosts haunting the places that we've once lived. But I also don't know what happens to us after we die, so that's one of the things that makes this movie a universal experience is that we all do spend a lot of time thinking about that. And even though I don't think anyone's going to go to this movie and think, ah, this guy's got the answers, it does engage with that thought process that we all participate in.
Is it easy or is it a challenge as a filmmaker to work around something that nobody knows? We don't know what happens. So does that make it you have creative license to hypothesize however you think
it's going to go? Yeah, I think it does. I mean, I think there's a lack of specificity in this movie, which I find personally helpful. We never like show, when there's a door that opens at one point and you don't see what's on the other side of it. And that's important to me. There are other movies that have shown what's on the other side. And that's great, like Defending Your Life, the Albert Brooks movie. I do not believe for a second that that's what the afterlife is like, but I love seeing that version of it.
Yeah. There's something really great about this movie in the way that it is plausible. It makes sense that, you know, we could possibly inhabitate where we live.
Yeah.
And also be around after we die. You know, I think that when watching it, it wasn't necessarily that this was, yes, this is how it happens, but there's something beyond just the idea of a ghost story, but there's something spiritual about what happens to our, not just us, but our loved ones after we pass.
I mean, there's two sides of that coin, and they're both very potent, and they both mean a lot to me. One is the classic idea of that everyone wishes they could be a specter at their own funeral to watch people grieve for them, which is, I think, just a sort of a an ego trip of sorts. It's an extension of our egos that we wish we could be around after we're gone to watch how people deal with our absence, because we all feel, to some one degree or another, self-important enough to feel that, you know, we will get to see people miss us if we were so lucky to do that.
Yeah, right, right.
And then the flip side of that is we don't want the people that we love around us to be gone. And we would love to have the comfort of knowing that our loved ones are still with us, not just, you know, in whatever afterlife we might believe in, but in the rooms that we inhabit. That is a very lovely and comforting thought, and one that I don't think is necessarily untrue. I do think that when you leave a room, you leave a little bit of yourself behind. Whatever that is impossible at this point in human history to quantify in any sort of way, but I do believe that to be true. And to that extent, I suppose you could say I do believe in ghosts.
A Ghost Story is out in theaters tonight, opens up tonight. The writer and filmmaker David Lowery is in studio with us here at the Big Table talking about the film, which stars Casey Affleck and Rooney Mara. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk more here at the Big Table. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest in studio, filmmaker David Lowery. His film, A Ghost Story, opens up tonight. Chicago, you can see it at several different theater houses. It's a movie that's getting a lot of attention, a lot of buzz, because it played so well at Sundance. And one of the things I love about it is it kind of was a secret movie.
Yeah.
It stars Casey Affleck, and there was this thought of, I mean, at this point, anything that Casey Affleck does, we all know about it. But it kind of came out of nowhere. It was, I mean, talk about what it means to be a secret movie.
You know, whenever you make a movie of a certain scale, it gets announced in the trades. You know, that's the first thing that happens. In Variety or Hollywood Reporter, they'll say, this actor is attached to this project and it's going to start shooting in 6 weeks. And as soon as that happens, expectations are set for the movie. People start to imagine what it's going to be or where it's going to premiere, or just, you know, they'll start assigning various values to the movie that don't actually exist.
Right.
That is fine for some movies, but for other movies, it can be a burden. You know, as a filmmaker, you're aware of that, and you start trying to match those preconceived notions and try to set out to achieve what you are imagining other people are expecting the movie to be.
That's interesting. You feel that as a director and as a filmmaker when the buzz comes from, David Lowery's working on a new film, that you feel that stress?
To a certain extent, yeah, because I always am making movies for audiences. I want to make audiences happy. And yet at the same time, the best way for me to do that is to just make myself happy. If I'm thinking about anybody else, usually the movie starts to become diluted or watered down because I'm just trying to please all sorts of imaginary people out there. And if I'm just trying to please myself, you know, I go to the movies all the time. I see everything. I love movies. And if I am trying to satisfy myself as an audience member, I know that it will reach other people as well. But it's easy to get distracted from that.
Do you have to negotiate that? I mean, with agents and managers and people in Hollywood who want to say, we want to tell people that Casey Affleck's shooting this film.
In this case, no, because we didn't tell anybody, and Casey and Rooney were both very excited about the idea of doing something completely under the radar. So there was, you know, a little bit of, you know, interaction with their agents because we just wanted to make sure that they, you know, they were signing up to do a movie that was incredibly low budget, far smaller than anything else they've ever done, but we wanted to make sure in case it sold they would get some, you know, some profits. Yeah. And so we had a brief contract written up, and for all intents and purposes, everyone assumed this was going to be a short film because the screenplay was only 30 pages. We never said it wasn't a short film, but when you see a 30-page script, you just sort of assume, oh, this is a short film. So a great way to get Hollywood to ignore what you're doing is to just say you're making a short film. And no one paid any attention to us, nor did they spill the beans.
That's such an interesting idea that it's 30 pages because, you know, and I was reading a little bit about some reviews about, you know, maybe one sentence for one scene.
Yeah.
And what we see on the screen can be 5-10 minutes long. If you were writing the screenplay for this, and there's a lot of silent moments in this, there's a lot of patient moments in this, it has to help you that you wrote the short film because you can take liberties as a director to really suss out what you want from that one sentence.
Exactly right. And sometimes those scenes that are so simple were very thoroughly described. I would put a lot of novelistic, prosaic description in to really convey exactly what was supposed to be happening. But other times, there were scenes that consisted of a single sentence that said, the ghost sits alone in the house. And then we can kind of extrapolate from that on set and figure out what room is he in, what's going on, like what is the value of that scene. But it was indeed very simple and very mundane. The script did not like go into great depths of like emotion. You know, I wanted to leave that up to be discovered on set. But if you were to read the script now, after having seen the movie, you would say, oh, yeah, that's the movie I just watched. But there's a lot of subtext and such in there that you don't get until you're watching the images on screen.
There's a feel and an emotion in the movie of watching a scene that we're used to as movie watchers, to be in a position where we're going to see cuts or we're going to see something come from a 2-3-4 minute scene. That doesn't happen necessarily. But there's something eerie and emotional about sitting in the moment in the theater and experiencing that at the same time, in real time, as the actors on the stage.
Yeah,
the screen.
It really, to me, punctures through the inherent artifice of the filmmaking. Because, yes, we are conditioned to expect a scene to last a certain way and to be presented within a certain running time. You know, you want, if someone's talking, you expect that reverse shot to come into play at a certain point. And when you remove those expectations, where actually you can't remove the expectations, but when you take that
challenge them, right,
you take that away, you are forced to just reconcile with the image before you in a different fashion, and you really become aware of the time that it takes to watch something and to engage with something. You engage with the image in a new way. If your mind wanders, that's also okay. And, you know, there's some of these shots in this movie last long enough to where if your mind wanders, the shot will still be going on when you get back to it.
There's a conflict that goes on as the viewer. I mean, it's fascinating. It's a great lesson in art, in the way that you are have these expectations that film has put on you, that something is going to happen, or there is going to be a cut, or like you said, a reverse shot.
Yeah.
And when it doesn't happen, you find that there's a conflict in you where you're like, I don't know. You almost step out of it, and then you step back in.
Exactly.
And that to me, I find it to be truly original and artistic achievement, in the way that you are pushing not only against me in the seat, but against all of the other movies that have trained me to watch film.
Yeah, there's something uncomfortable about it. But at the same time, the one thing that defines film and separates it from all other art forms is time, the usage of time to tell the story or to present an image or to convey something. And I really wanted to take advantage of that. And so time in this movie works in an unusual way. It is at times very, very slow and forces you to really luxuriate in a moment. And other times it speeds by so quickly that you can't keep up with it.
It's
and
a character in the film.
It really is. It really is.
Having this at Sundance and other places and the scene where Rooney eats the pie,
mm-hmm.
which is getting pulled out in the reviews and what have you, you saw how audiences reacted to something like that. You've been in that position. How have they reacted to having somebody just eat for 5 minutes on screen?
Better than I thought they would. You know, I was expecting a mass exodus at Sundance at that scene. As much as I loved it, I think that's of all the films I've made, that is the scene that I'm the most proud of. And it's two shots. In total, they're 10 minutes, but the real one that everyone talks about is about 4.5 minutes. And I can tell you that it's 4.5 minutes, but it doesn't really matter, because when you're in that moment, it lasts an uncomfortably long period of time, and it was meant to be uncomfortable. But beyond that discomfort, audiences have found it to be greatly moving and emotional. People start crying during it, and then other people are just so relieved when it's finally over. And some people do walk out. There have been, you know, people who aren't interested in it, and that's fine.
As an artist, as a director, as a filmmaker, do you have to push against a feel? Like when you say, I want to shoot this, I want to shoot it real, I want to shoot it a certain length, do you have the same moments where you're like, okay, we're good, and I got to push myself through it?
I do. I mean, ultimately, every shot in this movie is judged against the standard of my own tastes and my own sense of patience. And I have a very short attention span, so it takes a lot to get me to look at something for 5 minutes. But at the same time, there's actually something quite peaceful about that, because every time you make a cut in a movie, you are having to make a little mental connection. You have to actually exert some energy to like make the connection from one shot to the next. And when you're freed from the responsibility of having to do that, it's actually quite relaxing. But I definitely want to push myself as a filmmaker. I want to push audiences who might not be used to this type of filmmaking a little bit outside their comfort zone, but I never want to alienate anybody.
Yeah.
This is meant to be an inclusive movie that everyone can enjoy together, hopefully in a theater on the big screen. And as challenging as parts of it might be, it's never meant to be like literally uncomfortable.
I don't think it comes across uncomfortable. I love the artistic, I don't want to say experiment because it's not an experiment, but that is something that I'm just not used to in the film. And it really, I think it resonates with audiences because it is something that we're not used to. David Lowery is a filmmaker, writer, and director of the film A Ghost Story, starring Casey Affleck and Rooney Mara. All right, we'll take a break. We'll get an update on tonight's news. We'll come back and we'll continue our conversation with David here at the Big Table. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest in studio, David Lowery, the writer and director of the film A Ghost Story, which opens tonight in Chicago theaters after being a hit at Sundance. Stars Casey Affleck and Rooney Mara. It's a movie that has a tremendous amount of buzz. It's funny how many people I saw the film and it stayed with me for a couple of days. I talked to some friends who came into town, my wife, others, and they all knew the film because it was, the bedsheet ghost.
Yeah.
I've seen that. I said, what is that? You know, they want to know. But for you to skip the pre-buzz and get to the point where you're at now where it's about to come out, but there is a lot of buzz. There's people want to know more and more about this story, Ghost Story, mainly because of the way that you deploy the ghost.
I mean, there is, no doubt about it, some degree of a stunt to that. You know, like the fact that this is the movie in which a character is wearing a bedsheet is wonderful trivia. You know, it's something that makes the movie somewhat easy to market because everyone is very aware, like you said, like people hear about it and they see that image and it is intriguing. And I remember last spring I was shooting a movie in Kentucky and went to an AMC theater and saw this gigantic standee for our little ghost movie. And that was my first inkling that this might be reaching a wider audience than I had initially anticipated.
When you made the movie and made the 30-page that into a feature, did you not think it would be at a point where it's opening in Chicago on a Thursday night in places like River East right around the corner?
I had zero expectations. I hoped that the movie would work and be a movie that I was proud of and that I could happily put my name on, but I didn't expect it to reach the lengths that it's reached. And I didn't expect it to get into Sundance, which it did, and I didn't expect anyone at Sundance to love it, but almost everyone loved it. And now, as it trickles out across the country, the amount of support that it's getting has been really humbling. And, you know, like I said before, it's not a movie that's meant to be exclusive, but at the same time, the nature of it sort of suggested to me that it would have a very small audience. And the fact that the audience turns out to not be as small as I initially thought has been wonderful.
You know, with your success that you've had, and I kind of mentioned in the beginning the Ain't Them Body Saints, which was Casey Affleck and Rooney Mara as well, and then getting the chance to do the live-action Pete's Dragon, now you have the success here. With all the risk-taking filmmaking that you do, which we talked about in the segment before, about longer shots and really playing with the expectations of an audience, as your career grows and you get the opportunity to work on new projects, maybe more Disney stuff or what have you, do you worry about losing that ability to be creative or take risks on projects like you do with this movie where there are 4.5-minute scenes of one thing happening?
To a certain extent, but I think every movie has its own set of risks, and if there aren't those risks implicit to it, it's probably not worth doing. You know, I want every movie to challenge me and to provoke me in the experience of directing it, and as I seek to do my best on every film, I want there to be new challenges that I have to overcome because that is going to help me grow as both a filmmaker and as a human being. So I don't worry about that particular risk. I feel that I will always have, if I get to the day one of principal photography on a movie, it'll be because I'm invested in it enough and feel comfortable enough in my approach that I'm not worried about losing track of my creativity or losing track of my voice. What I worry about is like actually making a good movie. And sometimes I worry about that more than others, but I always know if I've made it all the way through the development process to the set and the actors are there and the camera's there and we're about to start rolling, I feel pretty confident about what it is that I'm doing.
Do you see the film before it's done? Meaning when you have the vision at the beginning as a filmmaker, as a someone who really has become a creative force in this industry, do you see the film and then when it's done, you're like, that's exactly how I saw it? Or do you discover things while you're shooting and in the editing room that change the conception of what you wanted a ghost story to be?
Yeah, I definitely discover things while I'm shooting and while I'm editing. And there are always these wonderful little seismic events in the creative process that change what it is that you thought you were making. But they don't change it completely. They just color it slightly in a different way. And so for all intents and purposes, the finished product that we now have that is opening tonight in Chicago is a movie that looks exactly like what I thought it would look like when I first conceived it. And yet there's all these little differences along the way. There are all sort of things I could never have predicted or anticipated or expected. And yet inclusive of those things is this finished product that is a remarkably close facsimile of the movie that I saw in my head. Now, that's not always the case. It was the case with this movie. It was the case with Pete's Dragon. But I kind of had to learn how to let that happen, because with Ain't the Body Saints, that movie wound up being quite different from what I initially thought it was going to be. And I had to reconcile with that. I had to deal with the fact that this wasn't exactly what I wanted to make. It changed, not in a negative way, but just became something different as we were making it. And I love being open to those opportunities. I love being open to spontaneity. But it's also important to remember what it was that made you want to make this movie in the first place and to stay true to that.
When you're taking on a movie like A Ghost Story, which is about ghosts and the afterlife and what happens after you die, and you get to the point where you finish the film, it's based on your own script, and you have this amazing opportunity to see it on a big screen.
Yeah.
Does it teach you about the things that you set out to do? Meaning, you know, it's a story about ghosts in the afterlife. Do you take away for it, like, kind of like I do? I mean, look at it and I say, I become existential in the way that I'm like, okay, what really does happen? Or that makes me think about what happens in my house, or all the things that when the book gets knocked off the piano, things like that. Do you have the same feeling after you see your own movie?
I do on this one, but I can't quite explain what that feeling is yet. Normally when I watch one of my movies, I just see the technical details because I've been working on it for so long, and it's very difficult when you're in the weeds to really see the movie as a movie and to look at it objectively. This movie, for whatever reason, is the first film of my own that I've made where halfway through the movie I can forget that I made it. I forget what it was like to be on set. I forget what it was like in that house or to be directing someone under a bedsheet, and I'm just able to watch the movie. I forget what happens next. And that's a wonderful thing as a filmmaker to have that experience. And so when I first watched the finished cut of the movie right before Sundance, when I was just checking the final mix and checking the color, I was left with a feeling I couldn't quite explain. It really felt like I'd had an experience that was separate from my experience as a filmmaker. And so what I get out of it is something immense that I haven't completely reconciled myself with. It leaves me feeling very comforted, but in a way that I don't know how I got there. And so I look forward to actually watching this movie again, which is a really rare thing for me to say, because it's usually as soon as I know my movies, I don't even sit through the premiere.
You're out.
I'm done. But this one, we showed it in Europe last week, and I was able to watch like the first half, and I just did not want to leave. And that is a rare luxury for me.
I wonder how much of that familiarity has to do with family, the way that you shoot this and having Casey and Rennie again.
Yeah.
You know, and this idea that does it become less of the technical sort of I'm making a film and this is a film set, and more of we're creating together because we're so used to each other. There's a familiarity to each other.
Definitely. I mean, that's why I like to work with the same people repeatedly. And, you know, Casey and Rennie have become friends since our first film. So it was very easy to reach out to them as friends and say, hey, do you want to join some more friends in Texas this summer? And we're all just going to make something together. There's less business and there's less discussion. The atmosphere is rife for creativity when you're surrounded by people who trust you and who you trust. And that's just a wonderful thing. It's not right for every movie. Sometimes you need new people or you need conflict or whatever. But for the right type of movie, it's just best, like a movie like this, you can do no greater favor than to surround yourself with people who you would want to be hanging out with, even if you weren't making a film.
Do you find yourself now as a filmmaker, as you move to next projects, are you going to look to delve into bigger ticket items like this, like the afterlife or ghosts? You find yourself now gravitating towards the topics that may go unexplained?
Maybe. I mean, it depends on the project. But I mean, I often deal with big issues that are just slightly intangible. And this one's easy to kind of put in a box because it's literally about a ghost. But I just finished shooting this movie with Robert Redford that's very much a movie about getting older. And that's something, again, that we're all going to deal with. That's a big issue, a big ticket issue. And we're not dealing with it. We're not hitting that nail on the head, but the movie is all about that. And I'm writing a movie for Disney that's an adaptation of their Peter Pan animated film. And that's a movie about just growing up. And that's another one of those. Like, it's easy to forget about that because Peter Pan is such a well-known commodity. But and there have been so many Peter Pan movies. But that's something that remains true. That's the reason why people are attached to that story and keep wanting to revisit that story, is because we all have had to deal with that sad inevitability that we will, you know, that we have to grow up.
Growing up and letting go.
Exactly.
Yeah, right. David Lowery, my guest, a filmmaker, writer, and director of the film A Ghost Story, which opens tonight in Chicago, starring Casey Affleck and Rooney Mara. David, thanks so much for sitting down and being my guest tonight at the big table.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.